We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly chess interview show with accomplished chess players, authors, personalities, and adult improvers where they discuss their lives, their careers, and share tips about how to improve at chess. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. So without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a bonus pod of the Perpetual Chess Podcast. We are covering the 2021 FIDE World Championship. We will be coming at you heading into every rest day. We've got a great little episode for you. Here's the plan. We have two fun short interviews with friends of the pod who joined us from Dubai. Geert Vandervelt of Chessable. These days, he's actually the CEO of Chessable. He started out by making a free course about the Olympiad form, which you can hear in our prior interview. Then he started managing content for them, and now he is the CEO. So it was great to hear his perspective of what it's like to hang out in the Play Magnus lounge in Dubai and what it's like on the ground there generally. And after that, you'll hear a short interview with Jonathan Korbla of chess.com. Jonathan, also friend of the pod who's been on the show before. He's a trivia whiz, a speed chess specialist, a trash talking wizard, and an all around entertaining guy. He had great stories to tell with his boots on the ground there in Dubai as well. I don't know about you guys, but for me, the FOMO is real. When I talk to these people, I'm like, man, I wish I was there. And It just seems like so much fun. But before we get to these interviews, I wanted to give a quick rundown of what's happening in the match. I've basically cleared my calendar for this event, and I've been feasting on all the amazing broadcasts and watching the press conferences, just spending every minute kind of soaking in all the chess knowledge and entertainment that there's been from these three draws. So I'll try to synthesize what I've learned and give a quick rundown of the games for people who haven't been able to follow it as closely. So game one was a pretty entertaining. Magnus showed amazing prep as black. He attempted to play, most likely was going for the marshal against the Roy Lopez, but Nepo, as is popular, avoided the marshal. But Magnus had no trouble in the opening and even managed to push Nepomniachtchi a tad, but it always seemed like a draw was the most likely result, and that was what happened. Game two, when Magnus had white, was epic. As predicted on this show, we saw a Catalan, and Magnus, you know, he seemed like he got off some good prep, but he kind of quickly went awry. You guys might remember in my interview with Tal Prus-Zimmermann, I read a quote from Jakob Augard where Jakob mentioned that he felt that right out of the opening was often Magnus's weakest point, and that was certainly the script for this game. Magnus overlooked a move early in the transition to the middle game, and all of a sudden he went from having having Jan on his back foot to needing to sack an exchange and a pawn in order to not be totally busted. At least that was Magnus's perspective, and the engine tended to agree with him. So it's not often you see a player with white down sort of 3 points, and he wasn't checkmating Nepo. It was more of a positional compensation. But Magnus, you know, he fought back, and Nepo maybe played a little too cautiously, and eventually it was Magnus who was pressing a little as they settled for a draw. But certainly all three results seem possible in game two. And if you're only going to watch one video recap of one of these games, I would definitely recommend you queue up a Daniel King, Levy Rosman, or Ben Feingold recap of game two, or possibly all three. You know, there's so many insights to be learned. And that was one that, you know, if you just play through the moves quickly, you might not appreciate just how much drama was felt. I mean, the specter of Magnus losing with white so early in the match was looming large for a minute there. And of course, he could have won as well. Now, game three was like a modern engine special. Lots of opening prep, a shortest draw, and another Annie Marshall opening. According to Lee Chess's Stockfish 14 neural network engine, it was the most accurate world championship game ever played. Magnus had a 2 average center pawn loss. Nepo had a 3 average center pawn loss. So they played nearly perfectly, which unfortunately a super accurate draw doesn't make for the most entertaining game, at least if you're just kind of glancing at the game, not going through it deeply. So that one wasn't quite the barn burner, but it's still important for sort of the subplots of the tournament, because again, Magnus showed super strong prep, which is something to watch going forward, as I'll talk more about in a minute. Friend of the pod, Tal Prus-Zimmermann, has already shared his updated sort of model results. And not surprisingly, 3 draws don't change his model's assessment much. Magnus is still about an 80% favorite. As they continue to draw, his statistical edge will diminish. That's also something that was echoed by Hikaru Nakamura, just more anecdotally or analytically on the chess.com broadcast. Hikaru mentioned that he really feels like Magnus, with 2 whites out of the next 3, these are crucial games coming up, resuming on Tuesday. So I would say that the results most likely are going to fit into people's priors. If you thought Magnus was a big favorite, you're probably not disabused of that yet. If you were in the, but Nepo has a chance, or better yet, Nepo's going to win camp, then I also don't think you would have any reason to change your mind about that. So before we get to the interviews, I'll just share 3 observations I've heard from the many great commentators and from title player friends that I've been in communication with. And I tend to agree with these 3 observations as we tentatively start to look at the contours of this match. So observation number 1 is that Nepo came to play. Nepo does not seem overly nervous. As we mentioned, the fact that Magnus has had great prep means that maybe Nepo has been out of books sooner, but he's navigated these positions quite well. To my mind, he only made 1 significant mistake for those who saw the game in game 2 when he played c3 and gave a pawn back. That probably squirreled away any winning chances he had. But overall, he's been, you know, matching Magnus blow for blow. And there hasn't been any indication that Magnus is just going to win handily from these games. Obviously, the script can change, but impressive showing by Nepo so far, despite maybe not having showing as strong a prep, although there's always some conjecture involved in that. And number two is a related point. Magnus's prep has been on point. Nepo's not getting much with White so far. Magnus has been playing the Marshall for forever. It's been a big part of his repertoire, and he's come strong with it. And, you know, even if Nepo's showing a tiny edge according to the engine, Magnus clearly has done his work on these positions and feels comfortable trying to neutralize them. So one thing I'll be watching going forward is, you know, when Nepo does get his next white, does he take another crack with the Roy Lopez? Maybe try another line in the Marshall, or will he sidestep to the Italian on move three, or possibly even switch over to an English or something like that? On the Magnus side of things, of course, he ventured the Catalan going for a sort of solid opening when he was white, and got a pretty good position, got some prep off. But I mean, one key piece of information for Magnus now will be that Nepo's probably not going to play the Grunfeld. So he could continue to probe the Catalan, being that he had a good opening, although it's lost some surprise value. But he also could go for a different sort of queen pawn opening, like playing knight c3 on move three, and then seeing what Nepo had in mind, whether it be a queen's gambit declined, a nimzo, and to probe Nepo from there. Fabiano's coverage on chess.com has been amazing, and he's been mentioning that he feels like in their match, Magnus's sort of overarching philosophy, especially as the match went on, was to probe with white and to just lock it down with just knowing your stuff. So more prone to experiment with your repertoire with white. So Tuesday's game will give us a lot of information about if Magnus is looking at or planning a narrow or wide repertoire. But again, the match is young. There's only three games played, the last, so at least 11 to go. And the number three highlight or narrative is the return of the too many draws narrative. I understand for casual fans, it can seem strange that they're tying so much. But guess what? When the two best players in the world, as Nepo said in the press conference today, it requires a mistake. And these guys, they did make a couple mistakes in game two. That's why there were some potential fireworks. But in game one and game three, the mistakes were few and far between. But I do think if we can keep getting these, fairly rich opening positions, I do think sooner or later someone will break through and there will be a victory, or maybe, you know, who knows how many victories. But so those are sort of the broader contours of the match as far as I've gathered. Again, I encourage you guys, if you have time, to check out so many of the great content creators on YouTube. I've been enjoying every broadcast, just switching between them. I mean, Anish Giri and Judit Polgar have been great. On Levitov Chess, Svidler and often Kramnik and Morishenko have been doing a great job. The chess.com team has been great as well. So with Fabiano, Robert Hess, and Danny Wrench. So it's really an embarrassment of riches. I see a lot of people online. People definitely have their preferences. For me, I would be happy with any of them, honestly. I know some super hardcore people are watching the replay of separate coverages. My kids won't allow that. But other than that, I mean, it's just so fun to watch. So we'll leave it there. We'll get to these interviews again. We'll be back with a regular episode of Perpetual Chess tomorrow, and then the next bonus pod will be out prior to the next rest day. So please stay tuned for a quick break, and then we'll get to the interview with Geert Vandervelde of Chessable, and then another break, and we'll get to Jonathan Korblah, and then on you go, all ready for the match to resume. So take care, everyone, and thanks for listening.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
And we are here with Geir Vandervelde, an old friend of the pod. He is joining us live from Dubai. You guys hopefully heard him in episode 161 when he was merely an employee of Chessable, not the CEO. He's a semi-retired rock star, chess enthusiast / adult improver. He's also the VP of content at Play Magnus. He's a marathon runner, a dad, and super grateful that he stayed up the whole way till 1 a.m. on Sunday, technically Monday in Dubai, to join us and give us a quick rundown of what life has been like for him in Dubai and otherwise. So, Geir, how are you?
Yeah, good. A little bit tired, obviously. It's late here, we've been having really long days just because the Chessable team is here producing some additional content, which we're going to share some soon. We're working with Grandmaster Hans Niemann, who's doubling as a kind of reporter, but also he's doing these game recaps, like all the games. He's posting these videos to the Chessable World Championship course that we have with him. So, there's a lot going on. And then obviously also on the home front on Chessable, there are a lot of developments. And since I did recently become the CEO for the company, there's a lot going on. So, Dubai is obviously a great distraction, and the World Championship is really exciting. And to get to experience it so up close, you know, I was just today, for example, just sitting next to Henrik, and yesterday too, like just sitting there and talking to him about his son. And today I met Ingrid, Magnus's sister, and I got to talk to her for a while and ask her about her. All those, you know, they've been to these world championships 5 times. This is their 5th time. So it's a really interesting, from being a massive fan of chess and, you know, watching these world championships on a broadcast like Chess24's, and then sitting in the, you know, in the team room and just talking to these people. Yeah, it's very special.
Amazing. Yeah. And in the spirit of Chessable, we'll try to keep this interview short and sweet so that you can get to bed. And honestly, what you describe in terms of sitting in the Chess24/ Play Magnus lounge, which I saw pictures of online, and like sitting and kicking it with Henrik Carlsen and Magnus's other family members, that to me is kind of the primary focus of what I'm trying to provide here on Perpetual Chess, because there's so many amazing game recaps, such as GM Hans Niemann and Daniel Kings, and the list goes on. That we want to just give people who are, you know, not in front of screens a feel of what it's like. So what could you tell us? Like, let's start with this. How is Henrik's spirit? Like, we're both dads, Geir. We both know that, like, when our kid is engaged in like a competitive or important to them endeavor, it seems like we get infinitely more nervous than they do. Do you feel like Henrik is at a stage in Magnus's career where that's no longer the case, or is he just sitting there like petrified in something like game 2?
He was definitely sitting there really invested during game 2, and keeping an eye on the game. You know, we have it on the big screen. Whatever is happening socially when he's speaking to people or whatever, he's watching the game. He's making sure that he knows what's going on. And, if he doesn't trust the engine analysis of the broadcast, he pulls up Sessa's supercomputer to check what's going on there. So he knows to the second. It was funny, like in yesterday's game, there was a moment where Magnus made this maneuver towards the end of the game, like where he went king g2, king h3, and kind of hid the king on h3. And Henrik could say, it took Magnus only 9 seconds to make that decision. So he knows he's keeping track of the of it, you know, and frankly, I've been around him quite a few times now when Magnus is playing, and I find it amazing that he can stay so relaxed and have these wonderful conversations with people who want his attention. The other day, there was a journalist there from the Zeit. I think he spent about an hour talking to this gentleman while watching the game, and also, you know, making small talk with other people. But still, like, it was a tense game, but he's fantastic at that. And in fact, today when I was speaking to Magnus's sister, she mentioned that it's much easier to go to the first half of a world championship match than the second, and that she's never actually visited the second half of a world championship match because it gets much more tense because every game starts to count. Whereas in the beginning, much more people come by, it's more relaxed, it's more social, and the tension isn't, you know, super high yet because there's still this opportunity to turn things around if it goes bad.
That's true, but the aforementioned Cess, when it was showing like a minus 1.8 during game two, I mean, if Magnus had lost with black, I feel like things would have ratcheted up quickly.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But generally, you would say the mood is fairly convivial. It's like people checking in on the game, but also doing a lot of chatting when it's going on there in the, I guess you could call it the Magnus traveling global headquarters.
Yeah, it's actually really fun. Like the lounge is really nice. You know, when you get characters like Jonathan Korblaw checking in and...
Shout out to Jonathan. His interview will be coming after yours.
Yeah. We had Alejandro Ramirez there too. And we had Hans Niemann. And of course, Play Magnus Group CFO, Dimitri Snyder is an international master as well. So we have a decent amount of strong players in the room. You know, it was fascinating for me when... Alejandro was there and, you know, he's worked with Caruana for years on his team. So it's really interesting to see how quickly he assesses these positions and then just explains why things don't work or what to look for. Like he's so sharp and it was fun. They were analyzing the position on the board. We have a bunch of chess boards from House of Staunton. Shout out to House of Staunton. And it was really nice. We were just like playing around with the pieces and going over some variations. And Alejandro just had some variations on the board that actually happened in the game a little bit later. He was like, yeah, I think this is the critical line. And yeah, it was cool. Cool to see how like they can cut through the noise so quickly.
Yeah, man, those guys are wizards. Now, I saw again mentioned online that for spectators purchasing tickets, who I eventually, of course, I've talked to people there in a professional and media capacity so far, but I also aim to talk to a spectator or two before these bonus segments are done. Now, I heard that this time, unlike some other world championships, they can get headphones where they can hear the official broadcast with Vishyanand and Anna Muzichuk in their ears. Now, when you're chilling in the Play Magnus lounge, is there any broadcast that you can hear, or are you left to rely on the expertise of people like I am, Dimitri Snyder and Alejandro when he's around?
We have the live feed from the Oslo studio broadcast from in fact we have the feed that the producer for the show Arne Horvind he's actually here in Dubai, so we get to see what he sees, which is also fun because we get to see the, like, if there's a commercial break, we get to see what the, you know, what like Kaya and David and everybody are up to in between the breaks. So it's kind of funny for me because now this is the first time also for me to see what they do in between when the commercial break is running and like how they're like quickly, you know, shuffling things around or having a quick one-on-one about things. And then they jump back in the broadcast. It's cool.
Excellent. Yeah. And Korblaw was regaling us with tales of just seeing, like, bumping into grandmasters left and right. And obviously in your professional capacity, that's becoming kind of old hat for you. But have you had any like highlights from a social point of view, Geert?
I met one of the people from Isklar, which is the water brand that
Magnus always
had. And I actually had a really great conversation with him about branding and, you know, like what, because it's kind of, you know, why would a water brand, you know, brand a chess grandmaster? And so I was just asking him these questions because I was just really curious to learn more. And it was a fun conversation. So that was a good one. But maybe just a little bit more for selfish reasons also to just learn from somebody who has a lot of experience in that regard. And I've met some folks in Magnus's inner circle have been going to all of these different world championships. I thought that was cool. As far as like stronger players go and such, I ran into a bunch of familiar faces, but not. I was kind of hoping to bump into Kasparov because I know he's walking around and he's he's showing up unannounced everywhere. But I have not had the good fortune to bump into him yet.
Okay, yeah, and Geir, I know you recently ran a marathon. Super inspiring to see. I will not, you know, I'm a like 5 mile and done runner. I will not be joining you in that anytime soon. But it makes me wonder, you know, today in the press conference, I believe it was the aforementioned Korbla, I asked Magnus about his rest day sports. When are you going to get to make your debut playing basketball or soccer with Magnus?
I already did, and a few years ago played with them, and injured myself like real badly. So I was asked to play tomorrow to play in the football match because they're still looking for people, and I declined precisely because I'm still training for more running, and I don't want to get injured again, and I definitely don't want to be responsible for, you know, getting all competitive and, you know, smashing Magnus in the face or something on accident. That would be the absolute worst possible outcome. So I don't want to be that journalist that did that. So yeah.
It's like worse than playing basketball with Barack Obama or something, because like, it's not just that they're the, you know, they're the talent, but like, it's this particular moment. You know, if you're going to give Magnus a concussion, do it some other time, not during the world championship.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I know he goes 100% when he plays. I've seen him, he gets into it, and he's actually a really good soccer player. So, or football, whatever.
Depending on which country you're listening from.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Geir, as we said, we're not going to keep you long. It's super late. Last thing. So obviously CEO of Chessable, I can't imagine how busy you are, but is there any particular project that you're excited for that listeners should be looking forward to coming down the pike?
From Chessable, you mean?
Of course. Yeah.
I'm super excited for us to launch Chessable Classroom, kind of open, so to open it up to everybody. It's been in this kind of half closed beta where we allow a lot of people in now and like more and more. But we really hope to do a lot more with that product, and to see, you know, what we can do with Scholastics and with coaches and such. It's such a beautiful, you know, product that's still in a developmental phase, but I've just seen so many happy faces in those classrooms with these teachers, and the interaction is just great. So I really hope that next year we see more adoption of the product on a bigger scale. And then hopefully it can just help a lot of people, you know, enjoy chess and be, have this kind of social gathering and learning experience, especially in these times where, again, COVID is kind of messing things up in a lot of places. I'm glad we built that space now.
Yeah, it's super cool. I got a tour of it. Yeah, and it's awesome. So definitely encourage people to make use of it. All right, well, Geir, we'll let you get some rest. Thanks so much for joining us. And relish every moment. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of people listening who would love to be in your shoes. So
I realize that I'm really fortunate, and I count my blessings every day that I get to go and check out the chess and be in that environment. It's a really unique experience. And
And we should have mentioned at the top, I think, you know, a lot of people who are on Twitter will know that David Cramley stepped down at CEO, and that's how you took over. But just to tie up that loose end, David is still involved with the company, but no longer in daily operations. Is that right, Geir?
He's always going to be involved. So he took a more strategic role just because he wanted to focus on some family time. You know, when you have a company like Chessable that just grows rapidly within a really short amount of time, and you spent years building that, and then suddenly that thing accelerates and it becomes part of a larger group, and that company's then listed publicly and all this stuff, that just, it's just been so much so soon. And I think he just wanted to take a step back and focus a little bit more on the family and you know, kind of just enjoy that with all the additional pressure and all this stuff. But he's going to be involved forever because Jessible is his baby. So I can't imagine him not, you know, like he's my biggest mentor. So I can't imagine him not having him around.
Excellent. Yeah. And shout out to David as well. Inspiring to see what you guys have built. All right, Geert. So thanks again. Enjoy the festivities and the rest day and all that.
Thank you. You too.
Hey everyone, just a quick reminder that all of this bonus coverage would not be possible without the support of Blue Wire Podcast. Shout out to them. And of course, of the Patreon and PayPal Perpetual Chess supporters. So if you are enjoying this bonus podcast and you are in a financial situation where it's doable, please consider supporting the podcast at perpetualchesspod.com/donate. All right, on to interview number two with the inimitable Jonathan Korbla. And we are here and I am joined live from Dubai by an old friend and friend of the pod. You guys can hear a lot of his life story way back in the annals in episode 48. He is a USCF expert, a blitz specialist, often with a blitz rating on chess.com over 2,400. He's also equally or better known as a game show wizard. He's been on Jeopardy more recently. He's been one of the stars of the show Masterminds with Ken Jennings, a true trivia whiz. And as I referred to him in our first interview, he has a Forrest Gump-like quality when it comes to his wanderings in the chess world, not due to his intellect, which greatly outshines Forrest Gump, but due to his ubiquity, his ability to be everywhere and meet everyone. In our first interview, you can hear him talking about playing chess with like George Soros and Howard Stern and this guy, Magnus Carlsen, who it turns out he's rubbing elbows with again. But without further ado, let's welcome our guest from Dubai, Jonathan Korbla. What's up, Jonathan?
Thank you so much, Ben. I'm going to remember that superlative, qualified description of a intellect that surpasses Forrest Gump. I'm going to try to write that on some business cards. Smarter than Forrest Gump.
Got to set the bar super low and then just fly over it, Jonathan.
It's true. It's true. It's the easiest way to stay happy is low expectations.
Exactly.
I'm doing great.
Great. And I also forgot to mention that you have been working on Chess, A Reflection of Us, a documentary that has been airing on chess.com after their broadcast. We, of course, are recording this after game two. And Jonathan is the narrator, combining his love and knowledge of chess and trivia as it's a historical perspective. So, John, you were telling me that's what brought you to Dubai?
Yeah, it's a funny story, really. So, you know, during the pandemic, I started to do a little bit of streaming. And, you know, Danny Wrench has always been one of my big champions. I've known him for quite a long time. And he wanted me to do just, you know, more higher profile things. And we were trying to figure out the best place that I fit in. And, you know, they kind of approached me with a project and it sounded interesting. And, you know, I still was kind of hemming and hawing about it, but, you know, Danny definitely gave me the hard line about it. And then, you know, when we sort of discussed kind of logistics of how it would be and especially what the project would kind of coincide with being the world championship, I was like, all right, why not? And then I talked to my other friend, Ben Schechter, another longtime old Chessin Schools buddy of ours. And he was like, you know, you should just go to Dubai and make it even better. And I asked Danny Wrench about it and he said, why not? And then here I am. So it was a process that started perhaps in like the end of August, September. And, you know, we were doing a lot of recording and a lot of fun doing the research, the writing, the recording.
Awesome, man. I'm super jealous. And you did a great job. As I told you minutes before we were recording, it's great to hear your voice on it. And amazing that you continued your ability to finagle your way into these amazing situations. So I know that you've been to previous world championships. I believe we discussed in our prior interview, you're going with a VIP pass to the 2016 World Championship in New York. How does this one compare, Jonathan?
Well, this is a different pass I have. My pass says chess.com on it. I am accredited member of the Expo 2020. So I get to kind of bypass all of the unwashed masses who are kind of waiting on long lines to get into the expo. And other than that, I don't actually have the premier access that I kind of wish that I had, because you know, this is a little bit higher level of security perhaps than New York was. But I'm manning the chess.com booth. I am playing every single person that comes around and, you know, giving out prizes, promoting, you know, chesskid.com and chess.com along with Mike and Sean, and, you know, kind of explaining things to the layman, helping out with other kind of production things, and also doing these interstitial segment bumps of trivia questions. So I'm keeping pretty busy, but not busy enough that you would call it work.
Yeah, super fun. I saw you posted a picture of you at the actual chessboard that Magnus and Nepo are playing. So I got to ask, Jonathan, did you manage to like sneak into one of those private rooms that they have and like steal a banana or something from them, steal one of their snacks, a granola bar?
I've been getting as many free meals as you would expect Jonathan Corlett to get. I've been using the wide smile and brilliant charm that the savoir faire, the style and grace, the easygoing demeanor that has gotten me this far in life. I haven't actually been into the VIP yet, but it's kind of been Spartan in there. I can tell you that the VIP in New York City was sort of jam-packed of, you know, finance type dudes. And this one is, well, there's a lot of beautiful women in it. So I feel like I am missing out. So I think, you know, it's not too late. I think I'm going to keep making some efforts to get in there eventually.
Sounds required. Yeah, I know you've got like another week there. And John, what could you say about Dubai more generally? Like, are you getting a chance to, I know Judith Polgar mentioned on her broadcast, there's like 192 countries with their own expos. And, you know, who knows what else going on. What else can you say about your experience there?
Well, the expo situation has been really fun. I had some blisters on my feet because it is, I can't even tell you how many square, you know, the acreage of the place, but it's definitely at least a couple miles. And just from, you know, end to end, some of the countries have really done it up and sort of put their best foot forward. Other countries kind of, I want to say mailed it in, but it's, you know, visually compelling. But beyond the expo, oh, by the way, the expo is, I think, going to be torn down within 3 months from now. So it's a mark of, I suppose, sustainability and opportunity are the big kind of push points. But the sustainability is going to be kind of hard sell because it's not really sustainable to build up these very expensive structures and then quickly tear them down. But as for the rest of Dubai, I've enjoyed it. I'll say for me traveling, I do want to take in a little bit of flora and fauna, some nature, and there's absolutely zero nature in this entire country. It's just a facade, a lot of artifice, a lot of buildings that are kind of interchangeable. I got to see the world's largest Ferris wheel, or one of the largest Ferris wheels, the Dubai Eye, and that was really fun. Traveled around the city a little bit, and I did make a little trip down to Abu Dhabi as well, which is very fun. Got to see this Grand Mosque, which was brilliant, as well as a water park where I almost died in a water park because it was extremely fun, but I think it was fun for the reason that they kind of did not optimize safety. They just kind of cared about the thrills. But yeah, I've enjoyed my trip so far. I don't know how much I would recommend a Las Vegas without gambling to people. Right. But one cool aspect of this city is because they don't have kind of sinful outlets, they offer every type of like Turkish food, Georgian food, like the ethnic food variety in this city, and in terms of not only variety, availability, and price, is probably unmatched anywhere in the world.
Wow. So what was the best meal you had there so far?
Probably my next meal. I think I've had a lot of really good stuff. They have a lot of really great Indian food here too. It's a lot of big Pakistani and Filipino population here. So there's cool opportunities on that end as well.
Excellent. And Jonathan, I know you're BFFs with Magnus, as you told us in your first interview years back.
Yeah, me and Maggie go way back. Go back, like, you know, we play some ball together. We've done a lot of stuff in the past. He's definitely on his game right now. Like, every single time I've seen him, I've tried to be like, yo, my guy,
yeah, when we ask, ball. Yeah.
And he's like, you know, he'll kind of give me a little nod and he's like, all right, anyway, I'm here for business. But yeah. His dad, Henrik, has been really super happy to see me every single time I've passed Henrik. He's like, oh, John, come on. So I've hung out with him in the Chess 24 room, which is the mortal enemies of chess.com. So it's been really a fun little experience of the over enemy lines, perhaps, I should say.
No, it's a small world where it's all good. In fact, I think you'll be preceded by a Play Magnus guest. So hopefully we can.
No, I'm next world championship, I might be working for Chess or something like that. And then I'm like, oh no, like I was in the chess.com room and everyone was like, what you do, Corbla? And I was like, oh, I'm a soldier of fortune.
And you mentioned you've seen a lot of other sort of grandmasters walking around. I mean, based on my social feeds, who else have you bumped into?
So Kasparov basically like passed by me like ships in the night, and I didn't get to get on his nerves again as I usually do whenever he sees me. I've had a quick little exchange with Vishyanand, and
wow.
There's a few others I didn't really get to chat with anybody, but it's luminaries.
Amazing.
Without a doubt.
So Jonathan, I'm trying to keep these interviews short, even though it's like not my thing. I'm used to like these never ending interviews, try to put people to sleep. But one last question for you. I mean, I know you've got like a week to go in this trip, but as of now, if you think ahead to 10 years from now and look back on this trip, what from this moment would you find most memorable?
Wow. Well, I think the way in which people have been, just super, really pleasant and giving a lot of just general attention to me in terms of, you know, they see me in the booth wearing the placard, and I've, posed for pictures with a lot of kids, and, not like necessarily autographs or anything like that, but just it's kind of a little mini kind of celebrity moment because of this documentary situation I have going on. So, there's been a lot of positive attention my way. So I think that's definitely kind of a little cherry on top of a overall fun trip that I've had.
Sounds amazing, man. Well, please relish every moment. Definitely jealous. I'm jealous, and I'm sure people listening are jealous as well, but it's great to get that color. And of course, people should check for the chess.com documentary.
Reflection of Us.
Yes, Reflection of Us.
You are going to catch it on chess.com, you're on the app, on Twitch as well. It is a 15-segment documentary detailing all previous world championships. And it's really highly, created and well-made by the entire staff here. So I'm very proud of it.
Excellent. Cool. So we'll check for that. And Mastermind, are you coming back to that? Is that known? Any game shows we need to be checking for you on?
We filmed 3 seasons of Masterminds, and we kind of finished our last taping back in February that aired all the way up until the spring. We're on a little hiatus because of Ken Jennings and his schedule being so jam-packed with hosting Jeopardy and being on the chase, but I don't really want to, like, I've signed a few things about something that's going on perhaps on ABC in the fall that could be featuring your boy Jonathan Korbla. So I'm moving my way up from Twitch to basic cable to broadcast television, so that's the knock on wood, so let's cross our fingers for that.
Your star is too bright for Twitch.
Listen, you'll see me there. Who knows?
Excellent. All right, Jonathan. Well, fun as I expected. You always deliver. It's always entertaining. Please continue to enjoy your travels, and we will check for your documentary on chess.com.
Much love, Ben, and definitely everyone keep listening to Perpetual Chess. You do it better than anyone else, sir. better than anyone else.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Podcast Network.